Okay, we're beginning here on Chaf Amud Aleph, 8 lines down in the Gemara. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the sugya of Basar Shenitalei Min HaAyin. It's bringing in stories, basically case law, about these issues, some of which we discussed yesterday and are found in the Gemara in Chulin, as well as things that we're going to find from the Gemara in Baba Metzia. Stories are almost the same, not exactly the same, and for that reason, as we mentioned yesterday, there are actually nafkaminot, the halacha, between whether you follow the Bavli or the Yerushalmi. We'll try to point out the differences that it has a little bit between this and the Bavli. So Ginai, the Ginai is a river. It's a river that is one of the major tributaries of Nachal Kishon. And Nachal Kishon is coming out of the Shomron, the area of the Shomron, into Emek Yisrael. And it's famous for its role in the battle with Barak and Sisra. Nachal Kishon gar fame, that it washed away part of Sisra's army and helped to win the battle for Barak. So that's the area where this Ginai is, this river. Shataf Zikin. It overflowed. It seems that the Ginai itself, also like many of the rivers in Israel, increases its flow during the wintertime or subject to sometimes some flash floods. And it came here and washed away a bunch of Zikin. Zikin, we know from the Bavli, are nodot. Nodot yayin are flasks of wine. It comes and wash away a bunch of flasks of wine. Ata uvdo kumi Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Elazar. The incident came before Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Elazar, fourth generation of Moor in Eretz Yisrael, and they asked him what to do. They found the flasks. It washed them away, and then they found the flasks. So he suggests, Amar yichakmun shafaya kitrehon. So shafaya are the wine packers, or the vintners. They're the ones who, after the wine is pressed and ready made, they're the ones who perfect it, they keep it in the barrels, they're able to pour it into the flasks. So the wine makers, I don't know how early in the process they were involved, but they were definitely involved later in the process in terms of the packaging and in the barrels and maintaining, storing the wine. So he says, tell the shafaya to come and recognize kitrehon. Kitrehon is kishrehon. They're kesher. They're knots. There was a unique way that they tied up the flasks. They made the flasks. Therefore, they could identify their flasks. So, right, if you have a siman, if they can identify the flasks, then you can drink from them, then they're fine. If not, then obviously we have a problem here because it could be yein nochri. Right, this is, the next one is a very interesting word here. You have nukunika. Nukunika is very similar to the modern day word of naknik or a hot dog. Here it's describing the equivalent of a kishka, is that they used to stuff the intestines, and that's what's being spoken about here. Nishtakach, they found a bunch of them. Biknishta de bule. They found them in a place, Knishta, which is equivalent to Beit Knesset, Beit Knishta, which is the gathering place, Dibule, which is the governing council. But it seems to be it was a gathering or meeting place of the governing council of Tveria. So there they found these kishkas that were left there on the floor. It does bring up the broader question about the issue of Beit Knesset. The archaeologists argue about the existence of Batei Knesiot during the time of Bayit Sheni, when the Bayit was still extant, where there are actually shuls in Eretz Yisrael. We know that there are structures that look like shuls that were there and predate the Churban HaBayit. There's one up in El Kantir, which is worth going to see. They have a special computer system, robotic system that's rebuilding the shul piece by piece. And it's a very old shul from the time of Bayit Sheni. But many of the archaeologists claim that those were not necessarily places of prayer, but rather, like Beit Knesset implies, a meeting place, is where the people of the council, the town, got together. Later on, they were converted into Batei Knesiot because they needed a place to meet and to daven because the Beit HaMikdash did not exist. But it is argument amongst the archaeologists. So, Ata Uvdei Kume Rabbi Yirmia. So the case came before Rabbi Yirmia, third, fourth generation Amora. Amar itchakmun. So this is an interesting word. Sikiria or Sikairo avidaton. So the Sikairo, the original Girsa and the Kitveyad, as well as the, closer to the Greek word is Sikaira, who are these kishka makers. They're the ones used to stuff the intestines. And each one of them had a unique work. The way they stuffed it, how they stuffed it, how they twisted it and tied it at the end. Everything to do with that was unique. So he says, let them come along and identify their kishka, and then we'll know whether it's kosher or if it's not kosher. It's interesting that the term here, I don't know anything about this, but the word sikaira, which were also the name of the zealots towards the end of Bayit Sheni, the Sikrikin. I wonder if it has anything to do with it. I don't know if there's any connection between the two of them. It's just interesting. So they should look for their identification marks, whether it's the way that they closed them, they dyed them, whatever they did, they gave it a certain amount of identity. Now, next case. Gditzli, a roasted goat, a roasted kid. Eshtekach, basrati de gufta. It's found on the main thoroughfare, the main highway, by gufta. Gufta is a yeshuv between Tzipori and Tveria. Tveria and Tzipori were large cities at the time. This is a yeshuv that was on that road, Gufta. Bitiru mishum shnei dvarim. And there are matri because of two things. One is mishum mitzia, umishum rov mahalchei drachim. Because of mitzia and because of rov halchei drachim. And now the Gemara explains. Mishum mitzia, why is it mutar mishum mitzia? Ditane. We have a braita. Hamatzio miad ha'ari. Someone who saves an object from the lion. Miad ha'gayis. From an oncoming army. Mishunata yam umishunata nar. The Bavli has a sholulito denar. They have a slightly different term here. But it means the ocean or the rivers. They overflowed. The water. Somehow there is flooding of sorts that came and took something away. Imistratia gedola umiplatia gedola. Stratia gedola are like the inter-city highways. And the Platia Gdola might be the intra-city, but these are the large, major thoroughfares that go between cities. If you find it in any of these areas, Hari Elu Shelo, they belong to you. Mipnesha Balim Miti Ashim Mehen. The Balim, even if they have a Siman on it, they are Miyesh from it because they know that there's not a chance they're going to see this item again. In some of the cases, the first set of cases, it's because whatever the natural disaster or the animal that's coming to take it, the army that's coming to take it, they don't think there's a chance they're ever going to see it. The lion's walking away with something in its mouth, you don't think you're ever going to see that again. You're not going to fight the lion. And so therefore you give up. The army's coming. You don't think there's going to be anything left afterwards. The latter two items, which are not so clear in the Bavli. The Bavli and Bava Metzia pushes against these latter two items, which is Estratio and Miplatio. Estratio and Platio are the main thoroughfares. When do we say they automatically have Yeush on these main thoroughfares? There, the Gemara queries as to whether it's only when there's Rov Yisrael, Rov Goyim. What is the exact circumstance in which you give up? Do we, in a case where you have Rov Yisrael, do they think that Jews are honest about it and they're going to return it, so I don't worry and I don't give up hope? Or even by Rov Yisrael, we say that. It's Machlokas Derbish from Shimon Alazu and the Chachamim. And the Gemara Bava Metzia brings numerous cases and tries to prove it and keeps rejecting and saying maybe, maybe not, maybe, maybe not. But here the Yerushalmi takes that as a given, that is Stratia Gedola and Platia Gedola are considered to be places where you would not get recovery from. So because of that, there's automatic Yeush. And therefore, in this case, you found it on the main thoroughfare on the highway between Tzipori and Tveria. So then, whoever lost it there has no hope of getting it back, and there's automatic Yeush. So from a standpoint of Mitzio, you can take it. You don't have to worry about ownership, you don't have to be worried about Machriz. You can take it for yourself. You know that when we discussed this, we discussed it a little bit in Bava Metzia, but more in Bava Kamma, this issue comes up as a major effect in terms of possessions during the Holocaust. People's possessions during the Holocaust that were taken, I mean, they were taken and their possessions were taken. Later on after the Holocaust, people survived, but some of their possessions also survived, and whether they really have a claim against those possessions, because they all are in these items here. It's like the lion, the gayis, they took it away. Some of the chuvot that are written, they didn't even think they were going to live. Forget about their possessions. So there are stories about many years after the Holocaust, there was an individual who throughout the Holocaust went back to his hometown, and there were libraries of Sfarim that he took. And then later on, one of the people whose library it was shows up and says, oh my gosh, that's my library. Those are my Sfarim. And the question is, was there automatic Yeush over here? Does he have a choice in the matter? Does the person who went back and took them automatically have ownership over them because the person whose library it was had automatic Yeush given the circumstance? Anyway, there's a bunch of chuvot that are written with regards to governments that confiscated after the war, all these types of things, whether you have a real claim. All right, so that's one aspect, so the Metzia aspect. And then, what about the Mishum Rov Mahalchei Drachim? Mishum Chitat Nachri. Because Mishum Rov Halchei Drachim means that the majority of passerbys there were Jewish, and we're worried about the fact that it might have been a Shechitat Nachri, not Shechitat of a Jew. How do you know it's kosher meat? So here they say, because the Rov of the people that pass there are Jews, we're going to assume that the animal was shechted by a Jew and it was kosher meat. So here the Yerushalmi is Matir Mitzad Mitzia, that's a Choshen Mishpat issue. It's Matir Mishum Mitzia, because the ownership and the Yeush. On the other side, it's Matir Mishum Kashrut, because it's a shechita of a Jew, because rove of the people that go by there are Jews. The Gemara of Baba Metzia rejects the first aspect of our Gemara and says, maybe it's not a case where it's rove Yisrael over here. Possibility, it's not rove Yisrael. And that's the reason that you can keep the Metzia. Because it's not rove Yisrael, and it's rove Goyim. And that's why the person had Yeyush here on the main thoroughfare, is because he assumes they're not going to get it back because they're not Jews. Well, if it's rove Nachri, then how come the meat is okay over here? How come it's kosher? So the Gemara of Matthias says, yes, it's rov nachrim, but rov tabche Yisrael. The majority of butchers or people who were trained in shechita or dealing with these animals were Jews. So the majority of butchers or dealers in meat were Jewish, even though the majority of the population traversing that area was non-Jewish. So the Bavli has a slightly different view of this issue. Now, v'ishtakach, the corollary to the story is that they found out afterwards that min debeit Rabbi, that it was actually a kid from the kitchens of Rabbi, and they had reached the right psak over here, because in the end it turned out that it was kosher meat, not even just kosher meat, it was from the top quality. It came from Rabbi's house. And therefore, they're showing you, yes, it was the ripe sock, the way that they lent over here. Question of basar shenita alayim min ayin over here still is an issue that the Yushama here doesn't dress at all. Seems that it's mutar. All right, igul de guvna. Igul de guvna, obviously igul is a circle. Guvna is from the word gvina, is cheese. A wheel of cheese. Ishtakach bepundaka delevi. The delevi is probably wrong over here. Probably was something like Delevaya, Delevia, which was a location that was in Emek Yisrael, on the highway or the area from Tveria towards Har Tavor. In Emek Yisrael over there, there was this yeshuv called Levi or Levia, and there was a known stopping point for people who were traveling. The travelers stopped over there. That's probably what we're talking about there, that punduka, not of the person Levi, but of that location. V'tirua mishmim shnei dvarim. And they were mati here for two reasons. Mishum mitzia, or mishum rov mahalchei drachim. Similar to the story we had before. Mishum mitzia, detane amatzil miyara gais, miyara ri, mishunataya, mishunatanar, mistratia gedola, muplatia gedola. Hereilu shalo, bnei shabalim ityashim mehem. I'm not translating because it's the exact same braita that we just had before, which is that these are all items where a person is going to be ityash from them. So too with this bed and breakfast, or this motel that they had there, it was frequented by people. Every night there were new people there. If you leave something there, the likelihood that you're going to see it again was very low. Mishum rov mahalchei drachim, mishum gvinat nachri. Now, rov mahalchei drachim is a problem. Is this cheese kosher cheese, or is it a possibility that it's non-kosher cheese? So that is because the rov mahalchei drachim over here were Jewish that went through that area, and therefore it was assumed to be kosher. So they were matir kosher mishpat mishum tzia, because the person was obviously had yeush. And they were matir mishum yoredeya in terms of kashrut, because the rov mahalchei sham were Yisraelim. V'ishtakach, and again a corollary to the story, they found that min de Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi. It was from the house or the kitchens of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi that the cheese came, just showing that the psak was right here. The psak turned out to be correct, and that's what we see from the corollary of the story. All right. Amar Rabbi Mana, kuma Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Mana, fifth generation Amora, says to, or it was before Rabbi Yossi, a fourth generation Amora, Va'anan Chamian Rabbonon Machrizin. He says, I'm an eyewitness to the fact that the Rabbonon are Machriz. That even in these cases, like the Sracha Gedola and Platcha Gedola, where technically we say that the Balim have Yeush, the Rabbonon are still announcing it and trying to find the owner. Why is that? Amalei, im in Havaita Meshkach Nonisaft. He says, if you found something, would you not take it for yourself? If you found something in these locations, would you not do this? Because Rabbi Yonah Avuch Lohamar came. Didn't Rabbi Yonah, again, a peer of Rabbi Yossi, the fourth generation Amora, didn't your father say this in a rhetorical sense? Hey, I love Rabbi Yonah Avuch Lohamar came. He said something like what you said. No, he didn't. Ella Amar, Halavai Kad Nishkach. Nishkach min piyusa ulegav. If we find a mitzia, we should try to find it. Min piyusa. Piyusa is probably the wrong word over here. It's rather a prustos. A prustos is the entrance to the city. When you come off the main istratio, at the interstate, or the main highway that comes into the city, as you entered in the city, you came into what was called the prustos. The prustos was not straight or wide open like that. It had a little bit of a turn to it. Like if you go through the gate entering any city today, if you go through to Yerushalayim, the entranceway turns a little bit, not a direct line in. Obviously, for a strategic reason, it's built that way. But you can't go in straight, and then it would split up after that. So that's what this prustos is. So he says, your father, Rabbi Yonah, said, if I find something, let me find it from the prustos and inward, where it would be on a main thoroughfare, and then I could keep the mitzia. So he says, you're asking me why the Rabbanon do this, and they go and announce it. He says, if you found it, won't you keep it? Because your father said, if I find a mitzia, let me find it in this area, so I don't have to announce it, I can keep it. And then the last line in the story, which is great, which is, afilu kein, eshkach v'lo nosif. Nevertheless, even though Rabbi Yonah had said that, when he found something, he announced it anyway. So what the Gemara here is saying is one of two possibilities. Either they acted lifnei mishurat hadin, which is yes, people are automatically miyayesh, and they're under no obligation to return it. Nevertheless, they wanted to act lifnei mishurat hadin, and in doing so, they went ahead and announced it anyway, see if they could find the owner of the object. The other possibility is that, even though he was saying that, he wasn't comfortable with the din. He might have thought that the pustos wasn't as open or as obvious as the platia and the stratia, which are these main thoroughfares, or like the Gemara in the Bavli, where the Gemara in the Bavli isn't sure that those areas are for sure considered hefker when there's rov mehalchei Yisrael. When the majority of people that traverse their Yisraelim, whether there really is Yeyush. It's a much closer again with Shebel Azar and the Chachamim over there as to whether it is considered a place of Yeyush. And even in that case, the Gemara poses the question afterwards in their Machloket, is that only true by Rov Goyim? Is also true by Rov Yisrael? So there are enough permutations here as to why he could have said this, that he wasn't comfortable or that he did announce it. But you do see that the practice of Chachamim, despite that, was to announce it and to try to find the true owners of these objects. All right, next Mishnah. Behema shenimtzeit miYushalayim v'ad Migdal Eder. Any animal that's found from Yushalayim at El Migdal Eder, somewhere out towards the area of Beit Lechem, Migdal Eder is mentioned in Breshit, in Perek Lamed Hei, also mentioned in Micha as well. So Migdal Eder is on the outskirts. It seemed to be that it was the borders or the outskirts of Yerushalayim. And so therefore, Migdal Eder here is mentioned as the place where they still have a din halakhically like Yerushalayim with regards to animals. That radius that extends from Yerushalayim out to Migdal Eder, you would take it all the way around Yerushalayim. That's the distance around Yerushalayim. That if you find animals, Zicharim, if you find male animals there, Olot, you can assume that it's an Olah. Nikevot, if you find female animals, Zivchei Shlamim, you can assume that it is a Shlamim. The animals in Yerushalayim, if you find them in Yerushalayim, for sure, considered to be Kodesh. The majority of animals in Yerushalayim, probably the but overwhelming majority of animals are Kodesh. And so that applies not only to Yerushalayim, but the outskirts of Yerushalayim as well. Any animal that you find there is considered to be a korban, and we have to determine what the korban is. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ha-ra'oi l'psachim, if the animal that you find in this perimeter is ra'oi for a korban Pesach, that means an aze or a keves bachna, 1 year old, a lamb or a kid, so that ra'oi l'psachim l'psachim will go to a Pesach, call them the regel lamed yom. Only 30 days before Pesach, when it becomes relevant to talk about the lochot of Pesach, talk about the lochot of Pesach, then it's relevant to say that people are starting to eat makdish. They're animals to be a korban Pesach, and you find an animal that's roi the Pesach, you can assume that it is a Pesach according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rishona ayu memashkenim et motzeha ad shemivi ima nisachea. They originally, any animal that comes in Olah Deshlamim, they come with nisachim as well. They come with the libations, they come with a minchat nisachim. Minchat nisachim, which is a mincha that accompanies a korban. So here you have the animal without the mincha that is associated with the korban. So now what they used to do, the guy found it, and then Beis Din used to go say, okay, well, that's your korban now, you found it, it's your mitziah, we're going to take a mashkon. We're going to take collateral from you to ensure that you bring the nesach. Chazru liot menichim ota uborchim. So, you know what you teach people, certain behavior, they wanted to make sure that people were paying for the nesachim. In the end, they got the opposite effect, which was people stopped taking the animals. When they saw an animal wandering around, they ran away instead of taking it because they knew there'd be a monetary obligation if they did take it. If they took it now, they're going to be chayav to pay for nisachim, and they don't want that. So you find a mitziah, and they go, oh, congratulations, you found this mitziah. You now chayav this much money because you got to pay for a nesach. So people walked away from it. Then the Beit Din instituted that the nisachim would be paid for from public funds at that point in time. So to avoid the problem, they moved the obligation of Nisachim to the public funds, and they allowed the people who found them then to bring them as a korban. So they freed those people who found them of the obligation to pay for Nisachim, and therefore they would bring them back to Yerushalayim as korbanot. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Zayin Dvarim Itkinu Beit Din. Beit Din instituted 7 things. Now, obviously there's a common denominator between the 7, and that's why they're brought here together. The first of which is Vizeh Echad Mehem. The first one is, the one that we just mentioned, is that the tzibur will pay for the nisachim. Nachri, sheshalach oloto mimedinat hayam. A non-Jew who sends his korban from overseas, v'shalach ima nisachim, and he sent with it the nisachim that come along with it, then krivim mishalo. They are brought, he sent the nisachim, and he sent the korban. We accept it based on the fact that in olah, we have the limud in the Gemara, that in olah, nidava, and olah nidava can come from even non-Jews. So we accept the korban, and we accept the nisachim that he sent to accompany it. Vim lav, what happens if he doesn't send nisachim? Just he sent the funds to pay for nisachim. Vim lav, krivim mishal tzibur. So here's the takanat beitin, that if he doesn't send the money to cover the nisachim, then the beitin, the tzibur, would pay for the nisachim to be placed there. Now, the truth is, it probably is true of a Jew as well. A Jew sent a korban from overseas, and didn't send the money for nisachim, that they would do the same thing for him. The reason they picked on a goy is because a goy wouldn't know that. A Jew should have known the fact that he needed to send the money for the nisachim, so they picked the more common case of where it would happen. V'chein, next case is ger shemet. We have a convert who passes away. This is number 3. V'niach zvachim, and he left over a korbanot. Im yashlo nisachim, krivim mishalo. If he has the funds or the materials to bring the nisachim, we take from his possessions and we bring the nisachim. V'im lav, if he doesn't have that, then krivim mishal tzibor. They're brought from the tzibor. Here's a case because a ger does not have yorshim. In a normal case where a person has yorshim, we'd force the yorshim to bring the korbanot and to pay for the nisachim. But here, where there are no yorshim, the public funds take over to pay for the nisachim. So that's number 3. 4. Tznai beitin hu, al kohen gadol shemet. A tznai beitin is when the kohen gadol passes away, shedei minchato greva mishel tzibor. That the tzibor, the public funds would come in and fill in to bring the minchat chavitin that the kohen gadol brought every day. In the Mikdash, kohen gadol brought a minchat chavitin every day, machetzita baboker, machetzita baerev. Half of it in the morning, half of it in the evening. We're going to discuss this in the Gemara more extensively. But that korban, if he dies, tzibor would fill in for the time period that there was no Kohen Gadol. Even the Minchat Chavitim of the Kohen Gadol normally in the Mikdash is not an obligation of the Kohen Gadol to bring it himself. He has to sponsor it, he has to pay for it, so it would make no difference here. So too over here, when the tzibor pays for it, anybody, any Kohen that's working there can bring the Minchat Chavitim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishal Yorshin. Now it doesn't come from the funds or public funds, it comes from the inheritors of the Kohen Gadol. Now this is the inheritors of the Kohen Gadol, despite the fact that they're not going to inherit the position. So here, obviously they're Kohanim, his children, but they don't necessarily have to become the Kohen Gadol, despite the fact that they're not necessarily going to be appointed as the Kohen Gadol, they still have to pay for it, and we dash in that from the Psukim, we'll see that at the end of today's daf. Ushleima haita krevan. This is according to both. Both according to the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. They both agree that when it's brought from the funds of the tzibor, it's brought from the yorshin, you no longer split it. The way the Kohen Gadol brings it, he brings the nisaron, and then he splits it. Half is brought in the morning, half is brought in the afternoon. As opposed to that, when it comes to either the tzibor or the yorshin bring it, they bring a full nisaron, and each time a full nisaron is mukrav al mizbeach. You don't split it. Again, we'll learn that out of the psukim. Here's number 5. Number 5 is ala melach valeitzim shiva kohanim neotin behen. The salt that was donated or paid for by the Mikdash, as well as the firewood that was there, that the kohanim were allowed to benefit from it. Now, in terms of the salt was to eat the korbanot. They ate the chatat, the asham, the kodesh kodeshim that they ate there. They were permitted to use that salt for their eating of kodeshim. Now, the Gemara talks about the fact that kohanim are allowed to bring in chulin food in order to supplement their meals so they would be eating ala sova. In that case, they cannot use the salt. The salt is only permitted to use in the context of kodashim, or their portions of the kodashim. They can't use it for food that they're bringing in on the outside. Now, in terms of the etzim, in terms of the wood, there are two opinions as to what the wood was. The wood could either be for cooking of their portions of the korbanot, and that's where they're permitted to use, or the wood could be for the Beit HaMokad. Beit HaMokad is the location where the kohanim used to sleep overnight, right on the edge of the Mikdash, and they used to keep a pyre there. There was a fire there to keep them warm. So that question, the wood could either be used for that purpose, or it's for cooking of the korban of the kohanim. There are different opinions as to what the benefit they're allowed to get from the etzim. That's number 5. Number 6 is ala para. Shelo yehu mo'alim be'efara. There is no me'ilah in the efer. The efer of the para duma. Now truthfully, there's only me'ilah in the para duma when it's alive. Once you make it into ashes, Ma'ashenasem mitzvato, once the mitzvah is done, there is no din of mi'ilah. In a Torah, the afer, the ashes do not have a din of mi'ilah. You cannot misappropriate hektesh because they no longer are hektesh. So that's min haTorah. The Chachamim came in and instituted that there will be mi'ilah by the afer because people were misusing the afer aparad.
I think that that's pretty valuable.
Well, value is not the determination of mi'ilah. Mi'ilah means that's be owned by hektesh. It's a dusha. Yeah, for Tuma and Tara, we give it a Mila. Yeah, so that's not, but there's no, There's no me'ilah on the Efer Min HaTorah. Chachamim came and instituted that there will be me'ilah because people were using it or misusing it. Because in their day, ashes were considered to be of medicinal nature. They used to put them on their wounds as a salve. So imagine if you could get the paraduma ones. So, you know, if it worked for Tuman Darag, of course it could work for healing as well. So they were misusing or abusing the ashes. For that reason, they instituted that there was mi'ilah. But then what they saw was happening, it's the same thing that happens. Also, we have to make a decision, for instance, when there's a holy sakana on Shabbat. If it's for sure sakana nefashot, then you violate the Shabbat, you drive them to the hospital. But there are times where it's questionable. In those times where it's questionable, it's harder to be matir because you're not sure if you really should or shouldn't. So if you have a nachri here, and it's an amir la'akum, and the akum is driving, then in those cases you would send the person to the hospital because you don't have to worry. It's only an amir la'akum. You're dealing with the darabonan level problem. If you're dealing with the raita level problems, then you worry about it. So what ended up happening was the Kohanim then started to not want to do or sprinkle on people that were safek tumah. They're safek tumah tamate. Because if you do safek tumah tamate, it turns out they're not tamay mate. That means that you were moel in the Afer. So what ended up happening was their institution then made it hard for the Kohanim to make a decision to do or sprinkle people because there were chances that it was wrong and then they'd be moel. So the Chachamim then went back to the Din Torah, which is Shalo Yeh Molim Be'Efra, is they went back to the original din that there is no Me'ilah Be'Efra because of the Efara, because of this issue. Now last one is number 7, which we bumped into before, which is Al Kinim Apsulot She'bot Shemishel Tzibur, that the Kinim, the birds that were found to be Pasul, that the community would stand up, meaning the public funds would step up to replace them. Rabbi Yosei Omer, and this is what we mentioned before, is HaMesapeket HaKinim, whoever is the supplier of the Kinim, who Mesapeket HaPsulot. He has to replace the psulot. The suppliers don't get paid until the mizbeach is happy. Part of their contract is if the mizbeach is not happy, if it doesn't get there, if they're psulot, avudot, they got to replace them. And so that's Rabbi Yossi's opinion with regards to the suppliers here. Right now, we're going to have a Gemara here. A Gemara that is trying to deal with the Mishnah. The Bavli and Kiddushin deals with our Mishnah. Basically, it turns it upside down, our Mishnah, in the Bavli and Kiddushin, because you have a serious problem in the Mishnah, and that's what's trying to be addressed here in our Gemara. That is, you said that you found Zecharim, what are you going to do with this Zecharim? They're Olot. You're going to give them as a Korban Ola. You're going to find females, you're going to give them as a Korban Shlamim. Well, is that always true? First of all, sometimes you have another type of female Korban, that's a Chatat. Who says that you find a female Korban, that it's a Shlamim, it could be a Chatat. You find a male Korban, how do you know it's an Ola? First of all, it could be a Shlamim as well. Shlamim can come from male or female. It could be a shlamim. Could be an asham. You have many permutations of what these animals can be. Why is the Mishnah so definitive about this, that you find a male, goes to Allah. Find in a keva, goes to shlamim. And it is true that they could be the robe, but you're in a lot of risk here. Because even if they are the robe, and we pass them on be a robe, there's a chance that you're bringing in the wrong korban. You're bringing in the wrong korban, and has kedusha on it, and you're being moel on the korban. So, how do you deal with that? So the Gemara in the Bavli ends up reworking our whole Mishnah to the point where you almost can't recognize what we just said in the Mishnah. Over here, here's the attempt of the Yerushalmi to deal with it. But the first one is Rabbi Shaya Rabbo. Rabbi Shaya Rabbo is the first generation of Moor in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Lavo B'dmehem Shanu. That to bring their money equivalents we're talking about here. So what seems to be from Rabbi Shaya Rabbo's suggestion is that you're allowed to use the animal. You find the animal out there, you can keep it, and you can use it. You keep it and use it, you just have to give the money equivalents to Hekdesh. You just pay up for the hanah that you got from the animal, now you have to pay Hekdesh. So now, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan challenges that understanding of Rabbi Shaya Rabbo and says, wait a minute. Omrim lo adam tsei umo'ol b'kodoshim. You're going to tell someone lachatchila to do me'ilo in kodoshim. You're asking this guy to use it. And then if he's Mo'el in the Kodashim, so then it goes out to Chulin, and now he can keep it. And then he just pays whatever money he got from the Hanoah from Hekdesh. But that's the Bidi Avad. If you were Mo'el in Hekdesh, this is what you got to do. Would you ever tell somebody, go on purpose, be Mo'el in Kodesh, and then pay for it after the fact? Yochanan says, I don't see that as being a good solution to our Mishnah, as to explain why these Karim are going to Olot and the Kevot are going to Shlamim. That doesn't make sense. So Yochanan says, Ella, Helchu ben Acharof. We go after the rov, which is your suggestion over here, David, which is imrov's charim olot. The wording here is a little bit difficult. It doesn't mean if, but rather imz charim. If it's a male, rov's charim olot. If it's a male, then the majority of males are olot. Im nikeva, then rov nikevot zivchei shlamim. The majority of nikevot are shlamim. So now the Gemara challenges that position of Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan solves the problem in our Mishnah by saying that we're just going up here rove. We're on the rove, which is that the majority of animals that are male are olot, and the majority of animals that are female are shlamim. And that's why in the Mishnah you bring it as an olah or you bring it as a shlamim. Moshe Rabbeinu's solution to the problem was, no, just use it. Oh, then you're moel. If you're moel, you just pay the money that it would have been for the me'ilah. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't like that answer because who tells someone to do me'ilah intentionally? So now the Gemara challenges Rabbi Yochanan's answer, says, v'ina shlamim, v'imina zachrim, v'ina kebot. Since when do shlamim not come from male and female? Are you really right about this rove issue? Because you can have equally have a shlamim that comes out of a zacharim. So ketzad huo se. So here's the suggestion of the Gemara. Now what should you do? What's the solution here? Motzian lechulin v'chuzer v'osotan olot. He redeems them, meaning he redeems the hekdesh onto money, and then he goes back and makes them into olot. He's makdish them as olot. Not buys olot, he's makdish the original animal as an olah. So now we know for sure it's an olah. Now we don't have to worry about it's a shlamim or an olah because he redeemed the kedusha to his money. And now he's makdish the animal and brings it as an olah. So the funds, it seems to be that he goes and buys, with half the funds he buys an olah, and with half the funds he buys a shlamim. And he brings them to the mikdash. And he says, if the original animal was an olah, then this olah is to replace it, and the shlamim is just a voluntary offering. If the original animal is a shlamim, then the shlamim is replacing that, and the olah is a voluntary offering. So he takes the funds that he redeemed the animal from, and then he splits them between olah and shlamim, and he covers his bases. Right, that's the solution of the Gemara here. Now, we have two statements in the Gemara here, one from Rabbi Zura, and one from Rabbi Yosef. The Gemara is probably out of order. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense how they're ordered. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip down now four lines in the Gemara, and move to the question of Amar Rabbi Yosei, the Rabbi Yaakov Baracha. Gemara in the Bavli says that the animal got a mum, and that's how you can redeem it. Rishami does not say it has a mum in it, and it remains a tamim. People are trying to read the Bavli into the Yushami. That's not what's said here in the Yushami. That's the next question. That's the problem here. Four lines down, Amar Rabbi Yosei, the Rabbi Yaakov Baracha. Rabbi Yosei is a fourth generation Amora. To Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, third, fourth generation Amora. Ein ze mezit. Isn't this mezit? Isn't this intentional? He's trying to redeem an animal that doesn't have a mum. It's a tamim. How do you redeem an animal that doesn't have a mum in it? How do you transfer kedusha? That's more like tamura. And tamura, you know what happens? The money becomes kodesh and the original animal is kodesh. So then, how could he do this intentionally? So this is a question for the Yerushalmi, who doesn't say it has to have a mum. The Bavli says the animal has a mum before you redeem it. This is not a question. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, which seems to be that you are doing this on a tamim, on an animal that does not have a mum, he's saying to you, how can you intentionally redeem an animal that's a tamim and remove the kedusha from it? So Amarlei, they said back to him, Mikevan shu tanai beitin in zemezit. This is a condition of beitin. Beitin built in. It's a takanat beitin, that when you find these lost animals, the avudot animals will be allowed to have their kedusha transferred onto the money. So again, it's the equivalent of, that's embedded. Anytime you're makdish an animal, there's a condition embedded in it that if the animal's lost and found around Yerushalayim, that you can transfer that kedusha onto money despite the fact that it's a tamim. Now we move back to the statement of Rabbi Zeura. I'm a Rabbi Zura, Rabbi Zeira, third generation Amora. Kama da'atamar taman. So now he's telling you, what is this Tanai Beit Din? Just like you said over there, Tanai Beit Din hu ala motarot, she yikruvu olot. Just like you said over there was by the si'irim of the tzibur. We said by the carbonot of the tzibur, if they had excess animals for the tzibur, the leftovers are brought as ola, keitza mizbeach, keitza mizbeach. They go to nidava. How do you transfer a chatat into an ola? It says, no, that's a tnai beitin that allows them that the excess animals are there at the end of the year, that they can be transferred from chataot to olot. So it says, ken at mor ufhacha. It at means a ta omer, also of nami hocha over here. It's nai beitin hu ala ovdot shi yikrivu olot. So to over here that the tnai beitin is that those that are lost will come olot. So he's explaining to you what is this tnai beitin that Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha is explaining to Rabbi Yossi is the reason why you're allowed to redeem it even though it's a tamim. This tnai beitin is similar to the tnai beitin we saw earlier in the Masechta. Earlier in the Masechta we saw when you have excess korbanot and tzibor, the chataot can be transferred or changed into olot. So to over here, you have an animal that's out there, it can be redeemed as it is, as a tamim, even though that's not normally allowed, because it's a tnai beitin. It's built into the kedusha. When you makdish the animal, you have that tnai beitin embedded in it because of the takanah chachamim, and therefore it's as if they said, if it gets lost, you can redeem it and take the Kedusha off onto the money. Right, so that's the way the Yushami concludes. Again, it's different than the Bavli and Kedushin, who says you have to get a mominit, then you redeem it. The Bavli deals with all these other permutations of an Asham and a Chatat. Here, the Gemara only deals with, seems to be, maybe Olah, maybe Shlamim, and doesn't deal with the mom at all. What's the difference between Yushami and the Bavli? Right now, Amar Rabbi Yaso, Rabbi Asi, third generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, Ad Da'anataman, when I was over there, Shamid Kal Rav Yehuda, we've seen this already two or three times in our Masechta. Once again over here, it's quoted unnecessarily. Seems to be like the equivalent of they took a copy and paste, and they took out this section. Here they only need the tail end of this piece, but they brought out the whole section, even though parts that are not relevant. But since it was brought together in the first place, they keep bringing it down. In cases, sometimes it's not even relevant at all. We saw that in yesterday's daf. Here, at least part of it's relevant, but the whole first section has nothing to do with our Gemara. It's just brought here because it's attached to it in other places. So there's Ad Anataman. While I was still there in Bavel, Shamed Kal Rabbi Yehuda Shal Shmuel. I heard when Rabbi Yehuda was posing this question to Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda, in second generation Amora in Bavel, who's a Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, he asked Shmuel this question. He frees Shiklo Mate. Person separates out their shekel and then dies. What do you do with it? Amarlo, Yipuv Nidava. Then it falls in a davar. But this has nothing to do with our Gemara. Motar asrit aifa shelo. Now this does have to do with our Gemara, and we'll see why later on, because it's from Yochanan the Shitato. So now motar asrit aifa shelo. The leftover, the excess monies from the korban, minchat chavitin of the Kohen Gadol, or of the minchat chinuch of a regular Kohen, if he has excess monies, what do you do with them? Rabbi Yochanan omar yolichem liyam ha-melech. They're no good. They're like chatot ha-metot. They go to Yam HaMelech. Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat, Amar Yiplu the Nidava. They go to Nidava and they brought as Olot afterwards. So that's the reason we need this, is because later on we're going to need to reference back to this. But right now, it has no relevance either. But for sure, the part about the Shekel is not relevant to our sugya at all. Asirita Ifasho Kohen Gadol. The minchat chavitin of the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yochanan amar chutzeh ota, v'achar kach mikadsha. B'shem ben Lakish amar mikadsha, v'achar kach chutzeh ota. So we mentioned before, minchat chavitin is brought as an isaron and split. Machitzita ba-boker, or machitzita ba-erev. Half in the morning, half in the evening. Now when you bring that half in the morning, half in the evening, how do you bring it to the Mikdash? Do you bring it to Mikdash? You bring it as an isaron. The demand is that it's brought as an isaron. So now, when you bring it in, are you mikadesh it in the isaron? So now it's kodesh. And then you split it up. Or, when you bring in the Isaron, that's just a working utensil. You're not Mekadesh it until, or Makdish it, until you place it into the half volume, Pesharet. What's the Nafkamina? The Nafkamina is, what happens if the Kohen Gadol dies halfway through the day? He brought the morning part, half, he didn't bring the evening part. Is the evening part Kodesh? Well, it depends. If you think that he's only Makdish it once he places it into the vessel of that half, then there's a possibility that that half is not Kodesh. On the other hand, if he's makdish the whole thing up front and then splits it, then for sure it's kodesh. So now Rabbi Yochanan says they split it and then only afterwards they makdish it, whereas Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish believes they first are makdish it in the Isaron and then they split it. Mara says matnita plige a Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah from Menachot is difficult for Rabbi Yochanan because there the Mishnah says makriv mechza umechza aved. When a Kohen Gadol dies halfway through the day, he's makriv half of it, meaning that because he already brought it, he was alive when he brought it in the morning. And then, mechzaved, the other half, goes to lost. Why is it lost? Because he was makdish in the morning. If he's makdish in the morning, then you can't do anything with it. It was already mukdash for being the minchat chavitin of the afternoon. He's no longer the Kohen Gadol. That's why it's aved. So where's Rabbi Yochanan? Why is the afternoon half problematic? He was never makdish it. So why should it be a problem? So Patarla, he says, I'll explain it. Shekain, afilu ma'ot yochul yam ha-melech. And this is where it comes out. Rabbi Yochanan is the shitato, and that's why it was relevant in what we brought before, which is Rabbi Yochanan answers that in a case that you have a motar minchat chavitin, what happens to the money? The leftovers, the excess monies of a minchat chavitim go to Yam HaMelech, according to me. So too over here, this is no different than excess money of a minchat chavitim. Okay, he wasn't makdishit. What do you have here now? You have excess minchat chavitim. You know what I think the din is of excess minchat chavitim? It goes to Yam HaMelech. So it is aved. Doesn't matter whether you think it's kodesh or you don't think it's kodesh. The outcome is the same. If it's kodesh, it goes liibud. If it's not kodesh, and was money set aside to be used for the minchat chavitin, it also goes to ibud, it goes to Yam HaMelech. So he says that the reason that it's going to Yam HaMelech, or being the ibud here, is not because it's kodesh, it's because it's motar minchat chavitin. And so that's why the Gemara brought this memra, a motar minchat chavitim, before. It might not have belonged here at all. It might have just been brought here to remind you of the fact that that's Rabbi Yochanan the Shittato. So that's what the Gemara says here. It's Rabbi Yochanan the Shittato that motar minchat chavitim go to Yam HaMelech. Now, matnita and plige al, we have in our Gemara is Rav Shimon Lakish, Rish Lakish. The Gra changes the girsa here and it should be Rabbi Yochanan. We have another Mishnah, or Braita, that argues on Rabbi Yochanan. And that is, Nimtzu shnei chatzeim krevin, ushnei chatzeim aveidin. There are two chatzeim that are brought, and two chatzeim that are lost. V'tani Allah. And we have a bright on that. Mechsa rishon, umechsa sheni, ubar tzuratan. The two halves that go out here, half of the first one and half of the second one, you have to wait for their tzura to be nitaved. You have to wait for lina. V'tzu the beit asreifa, and then they go out and get burnt. So you have a problem here, which is you have a case where a Kohen Gadol died halfway through the day. Then his replacement shows up. He has his replacement in place before the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim. The person in the morning who came had brought a half of his Minchat Chavitin. He brought the Machatzita Boker. The afternoon piece, the afternoon half is left over. The one who comes in the afternoon has to bring a full Yisaron. He can't just bring half, because the Torah demands when you bring it, you have to bring a whole. So he brings the whole thing, but he's only going to bring the half for the afternoon. So what you have here is an excess of a half from each one of them. From the Rishon, from the morning, from the first Kohen Gadol, his afternoon, Minchat Chavitin, is excess. And for the one who is in the afternoon, his morning half is excess. And then Braita says on the Mishnah that we get both of them go L'Aveda, they both go to Sreifa, indicating that he was Mekadesh or Makdish them. Now there is a possibility you could argue with the one in the morning. So as far as the one in the morning is concerned, he doesn't know he's going to die necessarily. That day, the Kohen Gadol is not sure he's going to die. So in the morning, he brought a full one of Chavitin. And then he, by the afternoon, he had died, so the second half was already Kodesh. He was Makdish the second half. So that's what you could argue over there. The problem is, for the second Kohen Gadol that comes into place, he knows for sure he's only bringing in a half. And so there you can't argue that by accident he was Makdish the other half, because he knows he's not going to use the other half. He's only going to make Makdish half of it. The other half, that he doesn't have to be Makdish. It net, the Braita says, both of them go to Ibud. And that's again a problem for Rabbi Yochanan's Shita. So Patar La, the answer is, we'll answer, get Rabbi Ishmael, like Rabbi Ishmael. There are many Gersot that have here Rabbi Shimon instead of Rabbi Ishmael. But as Patar La, either Rabbi Ishmael or Rabbi Shimon, the Amar, Isaron Mikadesh, or Isaron Mukudash. That the Isaron in the Mikdash was already Kodesh. There was only one measurement of Isaron in the Mikdash, and that Isaron was a Kli Sharet, and was already Kodesh. So based on that, this Mishnah feels that even if he doesn't have to be Makdish until after the fact, he doesn't have a choice. Because when he brings it in the first place, he has to measure it as an Isaron and then split it up. But when he puts it into the Isaron is Mekadesh because it's a Kli Sharet. And since it's a Kli Sharet, it's automatically Kodesh. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, he doesn't have a choice here because he's using this Isaron that is Kodesh. Now, if you have an Isaron that is Kulin there also, then you don't have that problem. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shimon, they believe that there's only an Isaron that is Kli Sharet, and so because of that, his Chamin Chavavidin is Kodesh from the start, whether he wants to be or not. It's automatically, it has Kedushat HaGuf because it went into a Kli Sharet. And now the Gemara moves on to another topic, which is, Kishe HaKohen Mitkarev Kitchila or Tchila LaAvuda. It's his first time on the job. Mevi Asirat HaEifah Shelo. He brings his own Asirat HaEifah. This is the Minchat Chavitin that is brought by a Kohen that's going to service for the first time. Ve'uvda bi'ado. And he has to do it himself. Unlike Minchat Chavitin with the Kohen that Gadol that can be done by someone else on his behalf, over here the Minchat Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol going to service is he has to do it himself. Why? Because this is his initiation in Avoda. This has to be the Avoda that he does first. It's not about him bringing a Korban to celebrate his starting working, but rather it is the initiation of his work. This is the way he initiates himself in the Mikdash. Echad goin gadol, v'echad goin idiot, she'avdu ad shelo hivu asirit ha'ifah shelahen, avutan kishera. So both of them, b'diavad, if they didn't bring this Minchat Chavitin, both the goin gadol and the goin idiot, if they did not bring it, then Avudatan Kishera. Alright, I'll come back and discuss this in 1 second. The Gra does have a Girs over here, Avudatan Psula. He bases it on the Tosefta, and he says that the Girs is actually the other way around, that with the Avad it's problematic, that this has to be their first Avoda, and it's supporting the statement of Uvda Biyodo, that he has to do it himself, and that's, it's not about celebration, it's about him actually doing the work the first time, and therefore the Gra has the Girs here, Avudato Psula. Although the older Kitvei Yad of Yisham, we have it as Avodato Kishera. Right? Rabbi Mano Bayi, Meimar is probably excessive here. Bo bayom shnitkarev tchila lavuda. Bo bayom nitmana liot kohen gadol. On the day that he is first going into work, he also becomes the kohen gadol. His first time working in the Mikdash, not only is he a kohen gadol, he's also a kohen gadol.
His lucky day.
Right, his first day on the job is being the kohen gadol. He's appointed as the kohen gadol as his first day on the job. Mevishtayim. He has to bring two. Echat lechinucho, one as his starting, because it's his first day as a voda, his initiation. Echat lechovat hayom, and one as the kohen gadol. The kohen gadol is chayav aminat chavitin. That is the way the Yerushalmi views it. The Yerushalmi here views it that a kohen on his first day of work has to bring a mincha, minchat chavitin, as well as a kohen gadol regularly. The Bavli also states that a kohen gadol on his first day as a voda, as the kohen gadol, brings a minchat chavitin. That means if you had a Kohen Adult who already had started working, and then he's elevated to the status of Kohen Gadol, he would bring a new Minchat Chinuch, Minchat Chavitin, for his change in status. Therefore, according to the Bavli, if on the first day he comes to work, he is the Kohen Gadol. They appoint him as Kohen Gadol as the first day of work. According to the Bavli, he has to bring three Minchat Minachot on that day. One Mincha for starting out as a Kohen Adult, one Mincha starting out as the Kohen Gadol, and one as the Minchat Chavitin, the Chovat Hayom for the Kohen Gadol. You could argue that the Bavli and Yerushalmi don't necessarily argue, because over here it happens to be that they coincide. Where the starting of his avodah coincides with being a Kohen Hedjot and a Kohen Gadol, there he only has to bring one initiation rite or beginning of avodah, because they accomplish the same point. He becomes a Kohen Hedjot, Kohen Gadol in one shot. You could argue that, and therefore the Yerushalmi might agree in a case where he was a Kohen Hedjot beforehand, that you'd also have to bring a initiation korban as a Kohen Gadol. It's just never be you'll get the three. You always have two, because if it's the case that it coincides, you only bring one. So it's possible you could reconcile between the Sham and the Bavli, but the Bavli is clear that the Kohen Gadol also brings that additional Minchat Chinuch that's not mentioned here in the Yerushalmi. Alright, now we move on to a discussion of the Minchat Chavitin. With regards to the Minchat Chavitin, it says, Al machavat v'shemen te'aseh murbechet Tiviena, Tufine, Minchat Pitim, Takriv, Weach Michoach Hashem. So this is the description of the Minchat Chavitim that's brought. So the first part of it is Murbechet Tiviena. Murbechet means that it's boiled in hot water. So you have to take the solet, and you have to boil them in very hot water, scalding hot water. That's how the Kohen brings it. Then he has to do something else here, which is Tufine. The question is, what does this word Tufine mean? What does it mean, the Tufine? So that's what the question the Gemara is going to deal with here. What is this tufine that he has to do after he's already put the flour into scalding hot water? Now we know that there's a machabat shemen here. Machabat shemen is a pan, a shallow pan that includes oil. The question that will come up also is, where does the oil fit in here? Is the oil a part of the process of the murbechet, and therefore it's done prior to the baking? Or is the machabat shemen the completing process here, which is that it's the basting of the oil, placement of the oil afterwards on top of the baked item? That'll also be a discussion here. So that's the pasuk of Minchat Chavitim. The Gemara now wants to understand what that means. So now the Gemara says, Tufine. What is the meaning of this Tufine? So now we have Bishat Hava'a Tufine, Vein Bishachari Tufine. Only when he actually brings it is it considered to be Tufine. You bake it. But when he actually makes it in the morning, it's not Tufine. What the Gemara is doing is what I explained to you before, is separating between the murbechet and the tufine. They say tufine means to bake, and the baking is only done at the time that you're going to be makrivit. But you bring it, the making of it that's done earlier, that is only done by murbechet, it's not baked at that time. So the Gemara says, wait, v'ha tanina, don't we have the Mishnah in Tamid? The Mishnah in Tamid says, emidu oseh chavitin lasot chavitin. In the beginning of the avodah in the Mikdash, at Alot HaShachar, not only do they start the avodah, they get the guys who are going to be working on the Minchat Chavitin, they get them to start working early in the morning. That means that they are starting at a time period where it's not Shatava. You don't bring this until after the Tamid Shel Shachar. So why are they working on the Minchat Chavitin so early if you're not going to bake it until why the Tamid Shel Shachar? Now, you have a problem with chametz. We have water going on here with the flour, and you have a risk that it could become chametz. You're not going to keep it around for a long period of time. The likelihood is you're only going to prepare it very close to the time that you're going to bake it. Why are they preparing it so early in the morning? If they're going to bake it right away, it makes sense. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar, we have Achai, probably should be Bar Ado, Lasot Chamin L'Ruvucha. What was their job? Their job was not to make the Minchat Chavitin, but rather their job was to boil the water to be ready to make the murbechet. You have to get the water to a scalding hot point in order to put the flour in there. So because of that, you have to start early. To get the water to the point where it's scalding hot, they started, they put the wood together, they got the water, they started that whole process. They weren't dealing with the actual Minchat Chavitin itself, they were getting the precursor to that done. And that's the explanation of what's happening in the Mishnah and Tamid. Now, Tufinei, we have a machloket here as how it was done. So Rabbi Yasso, who's Rabbi Yassi, the third generation Amora from Eretz Yisrael, B'shem Rabbi Chanina, the first generation Amora from Eretz Yisrael, Mitagna V'achar Kach Ufalta. You put the shemen on it first, and then you bake it. So the shemen goes in, and then it's baked. Rabbi Acha B'shem Rabbi Chanina, and then Rabbi Acha, fourth generation Amora, says the name of Rabbi Chanina, the first generation Amora, Ufa Uta, first you bake it, V'achar Kach Mitagna, and then you put the oil onto it. So machloket here as to whether the oil goes on before the baking or after the baking process. Now we bring an additional machloket, the three-way machloket as to what the word tufinei means. Very difficult girsa oat. The gra changes the girsa, but even the gra's girsa is not so simple. I'm going to read it based on the kitve yad, where the most likely reading is. Tufinei, which is tofena na, that you should bake it raw. So he's saying tufinei is a contraction of afia and na. You should bake it raw. Now, raw means that you don't fully bake it through. Rabbi Omer, we have Rabbi, the fifth generation Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, says, Tofena Raka, that you should make it very thin and wafer-like. Rabbi Dosa, who's a fourth generation Tana, Omer, says, Tofena Noi, to make it Noi, again, it's a contraction of the words. Noi is really nice. So now, the Gemara here says, Achen Ilein Pal Gevato, Kehein Pal Gevato. The machloket that we saw here matches with this other machloket, which is manda amar tofena na'a, the one who says that you have to make it nice, the opinion of Rabbi Dosa. Kimanda amar, and here you flip the girsa, it's like the one who says mitagna v'achar kach ufauta, that you first put the oil in, and then you bake it. So the one who says that you're going to bake it well, he's going to say, first of all, you put the oil in, and then it's rich, it's thick, and then you bake it fully, that's what it means, a fully baking. Once the oil is in there, mixed together, you're baking it nicely. So the one who says tufinei is really a contraction of tofena na'a, to make it nice, is also the one who's going to agree with the one who says that you first put the oil in, and then you bake it. Uman da'amar tofena raka. The one who says that you bake it thin, uman da'amar ufa uta v'achar kach mitagna. Then he bakes it first, and then he puts the oil on, because the oil is going to give it thickness, it's going to give it consistency. So if you don't put the oil in, you're going to end up baking it as a thin or a wafer, more wafer-like, and then adding the oil on top afterwards. All right, so I'm reading it based on those, the kitvei yad. You can look in the gra. The gra changes the girsa as well. It says chilufei girsa odeshkan, and he changes the girsa. What you have to do is you have to match up the positions in the braita that we brought with the positions in that machloka that we saw before, the amoraim, as to whether the oil went in first or baked first, with the positions of the definition of what tufena is. Now again, we had three opinions there. We had tufena na, that you don't bake it fully. Tufena raka is that you wait for like thin baking. The other one is tufena na'a, which is a thick or a solid baking, which means that it is much thicker or bigger when you start out with it. And we connected it between the question of the oil being there first or the baking being there first. Right now, the Gemara moves on to a new topic. Lo sof davar shemet. It's not only in a case where he died. Not only when the Kohen Gadol dies, do we then have to bring the Minchat Chavitin from someone else, meaning there's Yorshim or the Tzibur, but also El Afilu Nitma, in a case where he becomes Tamei. When he's Tamei, he's out of service. When he's out of service, he can't have the Minchat Chavitin brought. So what do we do in that case? We bring it from the Tzibur, or possibly from the Yorshim. We have that Machloket in the Mishnah. V'afilu Nitchem Imo. The Kohen asks that question, what happens if he gets a temporary mom that disqualifies him from being the Kohen or servicing as the Kohen for a temporary period? What do we do there? So there my answer is, Tane, we have a Braita from Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi, who is Rabbi Yehuda bar Simon, and he quotes this from the Bar Dalio. Bar Dalio is a Tana who we don't recognize, we don't know, and we don't know what time period he's from. And he says that even from a mom. So here you have a third, fourth generation Amora, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi, quoting an Tana, who we don't necessarily know, who says that even if he's Nitchem Imom, we have the same situation where either the Tzibur or the Yoshim have to step up and deal with the Minchat Chavitin. Here we have a Braita. Minayin the Kohen Gadol Shemet, lo minu acher tachtav, shidei minchato kreva mishel Yoshim. How do we know? You have a machloket here, whether it's brought from the Yoshim, which is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, First says the Tanakhama's opinion, which is that it comes from the Shelzi Bor. Where do you know that from? So the Pasuk says, Vakuena Mashiach Tachtav mi Banav Yase Ota Chakolam Lashem Kalil Taktar. So the Pashtuya Pasuk is, Vakuena Mashiach Tachtav mi Banav. The Kohen Mashiach who comes to replace any of the children of Aaron HaKohen, he will step in place. So Yase Ota, he will make this Menchat Chavitim Chakolam Lashem. It will be forever. This is the halacha forever. Kalil taktar. It will be fully placed on the mizbeach. That's the pashut of pasuk. Now we're going to read the pasuk in a derech drash that's going to change the meaning. It says, how do we know it comes from Yashin? Tamalomar. Mi banav yaseh ota. That from his children you'll make it. So the way he's reading the pasuk is, HaKohen HaMashiach. The Kohen HaMashiach brings it. Tachtav. If we have to replace him or there's some problem, then mi banav yaseh ota. His children have to supply it. So he's reading the pasuk as that there's an obligation for the Kohen Mashiach to bring it. If tachtav, if we're replacing him, or for whatever reason he can't be there, then mi banav yaseh ota, the Yorshim have to do it. So that's how they read the pasuk in order to say that the Yorshim are obligated to do it. So then, yachol yivyeno lechatzain, maybe you should bring it in halves like the Kohen Gadol, you split in half. Tamalomar yaseh ota. Ota means the full minchat chavitin. And therefore, kula amarti. I have to bring the whole thing. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, in our Mishnah, who says that it comes Mishel Yor Shim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, what is Rabbi Shimon's source? Rabbi Shimon Omer, in a Baila Mishel Tzibur, it comes from the public funds. Shinemar, it says, Chak Olam. So me, Shabrit Shelo is the original Mishnah, the Yerushalmi, but same thing, man, here is Brit Kruta Lo. You can only have something be forever with something that lasts forever. Kohen Gadol, by definition, is mortal, and therefore he doesn't last forever, and so is his Yorshim. His Yorshim doesn't necessarily take over him. Chak Olam means it'll be forever. Why, how it'll be forever? This deal is with Bnei Yisrael. It's the one who I have the covenant with. So this deal is with Bnei Yisrael. Now, if there's a Kohen there, he takes care of it. If there's no Kohen there, then who's the responsible party? The one who I have the covenant with. That's Bnei Yisrael. So that's what he says. So Chok Olam tells me that whoever I have the breed with, Kalil Taktar, it has to be brought fully, Kalil Lahaktara, has to be fully put on the Mizbeach. And that's the reason why Rabbi Shimon says that it goes on the Mizbeach fully. You don't bring a half and a half like the Kohen Gadol. He says Kalil Taktar means it has to entirely go on the Mizbeach, whatever the Tzibor brings. Okay, Kohen Gadol Shemait, Rabbi Bar Mamel, said Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, second, third generation of Mora, says, Boy. Now, Boy, pose the question. Michalfa shitatei Rabbi Shimon. There are a problem in the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Over here, Rabbi Shimon says, it comes out of the tzibor, mi de oraita. So he says, taman, amar, mishel yorshim. Vehalcha, amar, mishel tzibor. So taman, in the Yerushalmi as opposed to the Bavli does it differently. Taman means over there, tacha means over here. When the Bavli says taman over there, it means the outside source. Hacha is the inside source. Here, the way the Yerushalmi states is taman is the inside source. And then you say Taman before the Hacha. So Taman means Inshkalim Amar Mishel Yorshim. He says it comes from the Yorshim. Hacha and a Menachot Amar Mishel Tzibor. That's what we just quoted over here. It means from Menachot, he says it comes from the Tzibor. So how do we reconcile that over here Rabbi Shimon says it comes from the Yorshim, and over there it comes from the Tzibor. The problem is that where did Rabbi Shimon really say it comes from the Yorshim over here? We don't have him explicitly saying that in our Mishnah. So where is it that he says that? Because of that difficulty, you can see that the Gra changes the gears over here in order to try to reconcile it or try to come up with a solution to what the stira is over here. But we'll leave it as it is found here in the Yerushalmi that the stira is in Rabbi Shimon between one place he says it's Yorshim, one place he says it's Mishel Tzibor. So the way that people read it here in the Yerushalmi as well, in our Mishnah in Shkalim, it says that Rabbi Shimon says it's a Takanat Beit Din, meaning that prior to that, it must have been that it came Mishel Yorshim, but the Takanat Beit Din was that it came from the Tzibor. The way that the question is posed in the Bavli, and that's the way that the Gra changes the gears over here, is that that's the question. The question is that it seems from the Mishnah that we just brought over here, from Minachot, that it comes from the Tzibor. Tzibor meaning that Minatorah comes from the Tzibor. Whereas in our Mishnah, he's saying that it's a Tanai Beit Din or Takanat Beit Din. So that's the way the Bavli poses the question, and that's the way the Gra changes the gears to read the question in that way, which is Taman Hu Omer Mishel Tzibur Dvar Torah V'achamar Mitnai Beitin. Over here it says it's Mitnai Beitin, and even if you leave the gears intact, you have to read Yushami somewhere like that, because Rabbi Shimon never says it comes Mishel Yorshim. So then Rabbi Rabchir Bar Ba, Amar Rabchir Bar Abba, the third generation Amora from Eretz Yisrael, says V'lo Yehu Tu Makshe. Pretty good question that he has here. How do we resolve this issue with Rabbi Shimon? Sa'ato, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha. So Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, third, fourth generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael comes, and he says the name of Rabbi Yabal, third generation Amora, B'shem Rabbi Yochanan, the second generation Amora, Dvar Torah Hu, Shetei Ba Minit Tzibur. Ein Ochanami, the Dvar Torah, Minat Torah, it comes from the Tzibur. Hayiti Himer Yigabula. I would thought, when it comes from the Tzibur, you'd have to go out and make a separate collection for it, specifically for the needs of the Minchat Chavitin. Because it cannot come out of the Trumat HaLishka. The Trumat HaLishka is designated only for Karbanot HaTzibur. And this is not a Korban HaTzibur. Even though the Tzibur is paying for it, it's still a Minchat Chavitin, which is the private Korban of the Kohen Gadol. And even though he's not here, Minchat Chavitin doesn't get elevated to the status of a Korban HaTzibur. So therefore, Hitkinu Shedei Ba Min Trumat HaLishka. And that's why they have a Tanai Beitin that you can take it out of the Trumat HaLishka. Part of the Tanai Beitin was that the monies in the Trumat HaLishka could be used towards the payment for the Minchat Chavitim in order not to burden the Tzibur. So according to the Yerushalmi, it's basically only one Takana. The one Takana is that Mishal Torah, it came from the Tzibur. They realized that it was going to be difficult to go out and collect again from the Tzibur. Therefore, they put in a Takanat Beitin, a Tanai Beitin, that they could use the monies of the Trumat HaLishka. The items that are in parentheses over here are basically filling in the way that the Bavli answers it. The way the Bavli answers it, there are actually stages here. In the beginning, it was Minat Torah, it came from the Tzibur. But then it was Nidchaka Tzibur. It was too much pressure, it was too difficult for the Tzibur to bring it. So what do? They imposed it on the Yorshim, that the Yorshim should bring it. But then they realized that the Yorshim were Pushin, they were Pusheya, and they were not bringing it, partly because it wasn't their Mincha. They were paying for the monies, and they would have to donate them to the Tzibur, because the Korban has to come to Shel Tzibur. So they were just taking the money from the Yorshim, but it wasn't really their Korban. And so then they weren't paying up. So they went into and made another Takana, which is that it came out of Trumat HaLishka. So in the Bavli, there are two stages to get to that Takana, and that's what you see the parentheses here is trying to match the Yerushalmi to the Bavli. But in Yerushalmi, the core Yerushalmi, there's only one stage, which is it was originally came to Shel Tzibur, and then they moved it over to the Trumat HaLishka. Tosafot explains that Rabbi Yehuda would also agree to Rabbi Shimon's position in the end, which is, yes, he thinks Minat Torah comes from Shel Yorshin, but because of the Pshia of the Yorshin, he agrees in the end that it comes from Takanat Beitin from the Trumat HaLishka. And Tosafot proves it from the fact he says, because Lo Matzanu Mishnah, B'Masechet Shkalim, Shechilek Rabbi Yehuda Takanazu. We don't find anywhere in Shkalim that Rabbi Yehuda argues on this Takana. Well, in our Mishnah, the way we have the Mishnah in front of us, Rabbi Yehuda does argue on the Takana. Rabbi Yehuda's Memra is brought right in the Mishnah, and he argues on Rabbi Shimon, who is the Tana commander, and says that it's a Takana Beit. And he says, no, it comes Mishel Yorshin. So the Tosafot's position is premised on the fact that Rabbi Yehuda never really argues directly on the Takana Beit, and therefore he must agree to it. But the way we have the Mishnah here in the Yerushalmi, he does disagree with Rabbi Shimon, and that means that maybe he doesn't agree in the end that it comes from the Trumat HaLishka. Maybe he says that it still comes Mishel Yorshin. But we'll stop here.